It's a WIP afternoon show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz. Coming up in moments, we believe. Sometime in the next 5 minutes or so, we think. Jeffrey Lurie will be speaking live from the owners' meetings. We'll be able to hear about everything, right? About letting go of all the free agents they let go. I'm sure somebody will ask. I'm sure somebody will ask about Nick Sirianni extension. They'll obviously ask him about the tush push, which the rest of the league is lying to get rid of.
You think they're going to grill him about the dome?
Oh, maybe he'll ask. You know, Elliot will ask.
Elliot's probably afraid to ask a question because he has bird poop all over him.
Well, I wonder if he cleaned up enough.
I hope he went to the bathroom and wiped that stuff off.
But he said he had it on his shirt and stuff. There's only so much he can do. So the tush push isn't the only rule that they are talking about. The first thing that passed that they will do is overtime in the NFL in the regular season now will be like, oh, Jeffrey Lurie is now.
I'm open to questions, but... very, very special season, as you all know. I couldn't be more proud of everybody in the organization. When I said on the stage, you know, I mentioned Nick and I mentioned Howie, just incredible, and their staffs. But you guys follow us, and, you know, it truly takes a few hundred people to accomplish this, whether you're talking injury prevention, nutrition, training in every possible way, mental health, locker room equipment, the business whole operation servicing the football operation. I mean, it's transportation, dogs involved in the whole operation. It's just one thing, if I had to say, from owning the team, you just don't appreciate. It's so much more than just those you read about. It's just, you need it all. We've got this wonderful, wonderful culture. A lot of people have been there that are just at the top of their game. They're collaborative, and it's a special situation, and led by, you know, some very special people. Nick and Howie, just I can't say enough about them and their staffs, but I just want to highlight it takes so many people, it's sort of like football itself. It takes 53 people or 70 people on the roster. You know, it's, yes, quarterback, yes, this position and that position, but wow, it's truly that the quality of the 70 or the quality of the 53 is what can create a special season. The other thing I just want to say, I'm really almost never completely speechless. But it reminded me, it's incredible when you win. It's incredible when you're up on the stage. We all know how hard it is. It's very, very difficult. But the parade in Philadelphia, there are no words for this. Honestly, there are no words. When you are up there and looking at 1 million, 2 million people screaming for 4 hours straight along Broad Street and then going up to the Art Museum, I don't know what in life... is comparable to that. There's other incredible moments in one's life, you know, having kids and weddings and all that kind of stuff. But in terms of a profession and a love affair between a sports team and a city and a region, I'm sure it exists, but it is, there's no words to describe what we have with the Eagles and our fans and people in you know, Philadelphia and around the world, really. But there's no words. So here I am trying to create words. There are no words. It's that amazing. So happy to open it up to any questions, and I'm sure we'll get to a lot of great stuff.
Jeffrey, what do you think of the tush push bill being moved back to May?
Yeah.
Why do you think people want to ban the tush?
The tush push, they probably will be discussing it in May, so we have to be prepared for every result. I think for everybody, including myself especially, health and safety is the most important thing when evaluating any play. We've been very open to whatever data exists on the tush push. And, there's just been no data that shows that it isn't a very, very safe play. If it weren't, we wouldn't be pushing the tush push. But I think it's, first of all, it's a precision play. It's very practiced. We devote a lot of resources to the tush push. We think we have an unusual use of personnel because we have a quarterback that can squat over 600 pounds and an offensive line that's filled with all-pro players. And that combination with incredible detailed coaching with Coach Stoutland has created a play we can be very successful at. There's other ways of gaining that half yard, that yard. There's quarterback sneaks, other types. But we've been very, very good at it. It's a play that's available to every other team in the league. And I think it hasn't been used more than five times by almost every team in the league. Buffalo is an exception. And the usage rate has gone down over the last year dramatically in the league. We're still very good at it. We're not as good as we were the year before. We've got to keep, you know, adapt. So I think for all of us that have followed NFL football over the decades, there's an ebb and flow to offense and defense. And typically one of the great things about professional football is that defenses adjust to offenses and offenses adjust to defenses every year. When we won the Super Bowl a few years ago, you know, we really banked on the RPOs and were very, very successful. It didn't take long for defenses to adapt to the RPOs. And if you notice, we weren't as successful and we stopped using it nearly as much. That's, you know, as the passing game becomes more explosive, you see more styles of defense to prevent explosive plays. That opens up the running game. So the value maybe becomes more where there's an effective run game in order to balance against defending explosive pass games. So there's an ebb and flow, and don't ever remember a play being banned because a single team or a few teams were running it effectively. So it's part of what I think, you know, I personally and I think most of us love about football is it's a chess match. Let the chess match play out. And, you know, if for any reason it does get banned, we will try to be the very best at short yardage situations. And, you know, we've got a lot of ideas there. But I think it's a credit to using our personnel in a way. There aren't that many teams that have 600-pound squat quarterbacks and that offensive line. So listen, I, if it were any injury concern, I would be concerned.
You said if there's an injury concern, you'd be concerned.
I would.
Do they have to show you more than that it's more dangerous than a quarterback sneak in order for you to buy that?
Absolutely. I mean, I want to know what data there is. I don't think there is any. If you want to say that it could be, it's hard to make rules on could-bes and should-bes. You know, the quarterback sneak is one of the reasons we like using the tush push is we think it's a safer play than the quarterback sneak. The quarterback sneak, if you talk to quarterbacks about it, there's more spearing going on. They're less protected by players around them. And one of the reasons we got motivated to develop an expertise in this play is it was more protective to the quarterback. And so it's ironic that, you know, people would bring up health and safety. We're at the top of the game in terms of wanting health and safety on every play. We voted for hip drop tackle and defenseless receiver. We will always, always support what is safer for the players. It's a no-brainer. If this is proven to be less safe for the players, we will be against the tush push. But until that's the case, to me, there'd be no reason to ban this play.
Rich McKay brought up the aesthetics of the play was part of the dialogue.
Yeah.
What's your reaction to that?
You know what? I remember reading about the forward pass, and they said it really was an odd play that is no part of American football, and so it was controversial when the forward pass came out. I think aestheticism is very subjective. I've never judged whether a play looks okay. Does a screen pass look better than a in-route or an out-route? I don't know. To me, it's not a very relevant critique that it doesn't look right or something like that. I don't know. What looks right? Scoring. We like to win and score.
Jeffrey,
how he never acknowledges that he has job security, but obviously he does.
Yes.
How much do you value organizationally always looking 3, 4, 5 years out, as opposed to, you know, other organizations who decision makers, you know, might make more short-term year decisions for, you know, like job security?
Yeah, no, I'm very big on rewarding those that have done a great job. Howie is as good as it exists in the NFL. I will say better, you know. And we proceed in that direction. We don't announce things, but we proceed in that direction at all times. And, that's just the way I like to operate, and it's the way we operate. Yep. When you have the right people, continuity is big.
The minority ownership stake that you sold.
Yeah.
What is the plan for the money that came in from that?
You know, buy more cornflakes and Wheaties, and I don't know. There's an opportunity with sports teams and their valuations to not keep all your money into one thing, and there's a little bit more of a chance for liquidity. A big part of what I wanted to do was to try to get partners that were consistent with our culture, our goals, that shared my aggressiveness on winning in every way possible, and appreciated the culture we have organizationally, but the fan base. And we found that in two outstanding families, Kim and Peskowitz families, and I'm thrilled. I love having them. And an irony is Susan Kim, her first away game for the Eagles as a limited partner was the Super Bowl. How about that?
Speaking of money, since free agency started, you guys have lost several really key good players with huge contracts and kind of replaced them with guys on one-year deals and everything. I mean, obviously, Howie has a plan for, you know, addressing the holes and everything, but like, what do you tell like a fan base that's kind of like, you know, what's going on here? You know,
we want to win, and we want to win big. And the way to win consistently and to win big is to plan for the contracts you're going to have to give to your best young players. And we want to retain our best young players as we're going forward. It's impossible if you draft well to do that. So we want to make sure we're aggressive at being able to sign players early that we think are core players for the future. And in the NFL, the way the salary cap system works is it's based on, you know, a certain percentage. So the average team should not have a surplus of players they have to sign. When you're an excellent team, you should certainly have a surplus of players that you have on your roster. So my hope is we will always draft well, we will always have a surplus, and we will always continue to figure out who and what opportunities you need to try to sign players 12 months out, 24 months out, and prepare for that so that you're never in a situation of drafting an excellent young player and preferring to keep him and have no way to keep him. So the situation Howie and Nick, they've done an outstanding job of drafting and developing, and I think we're all really excited about the players that are going to be playing. That Milt Williams, excellent young player. Josh Sweat delivered so much for us. These are the kind of players that in the salary cap system, and you're a really good team, you better be prepared for what's next. And so we want as many draft choices as possible, and we want as much salary cap space as possible to plan for who we're going to have in the core now, 12 months from now, 24 months from now. So the goal is win big, and that's really the theory behind the whole thing, and, you know, I trust Howie.
Agree on that subject.
Yeah.
You guys have spent more cash
Yeah.
than most teams, and in terms of the void years coming up.
Yep.
significantly more than most teams. How is that factored into some of the perceptions of a budget crunch?
Yeah, no, it's inevitably you're going to spend as much as every other team. But yeah, our cash over cap has been high and it's continuing that way. I only know one way. So, you know, there's no implications of that at the moment. And all these decisions are strictly how to win big. You know, how to replace players that you're going to have to sign players that are excellent young players in their prime. And so that's, if you want to win big, you better plan ahead.
So you're saying the letting guys walk in free agency and then signing guys to just one-year kind of low-cost deals is more to do about, more has to do with the future contracts than you have to do
totally.
With all the cash that you've
got. Oh, yeah, totally. It has all to do with re-signing your best young players in their prime. That's the entire goal there. If you keep paying the market value of every person, every player that becomes a free agent on your team, you will absolutely be unable to sign most of your best young players. So it's so clear that it's kind of a no-brainer.
Where do things stand out of the potential extension of Nick Sirianni and generally?
Say that again, I'm sorry.
Where do things stand in terms of a potential extension for Nick, and what stands out about the job that he did?
Yeah, time? Superb job. I mean, Nick's going to be our coach, and we don't talk publicly, never have. You guys, I'm sure, will find out soon enough when that Nick will be our coach going forward. And he's done an outstanding job. You know, when we were 2-2, right? We then proceeded to win. Correct me if I'm wrong. We went 16-1 after that. 16-1, and the one was when Jalen Hurts, we were winning the game, got a concussion. So it's not easy to go 16-1 in the National Football League, four of which are against playoff teams, one of which Kansas City Chiefs in the Super Bowl. So outstanding job. Everything that I had hoped for with Nick, he embodies, whether it's connection, intelligence in so many ways, from football intelligence, emotional intelligence, managing of people, hiring of assistant coaches, growth mindset at all times. It's one of the reasons Howie is so good. Incredible growth mindset, neither are risk averse. These are all the things that we embody, appreciates, and is a big contributor to the culture we have. So everything that, I had hoped for early on, identifying Nick as the next head coach, has come to pass, and, great to work with, and he has a growth mindset. He'll get better.
If you think back to 2018, what perspective do you have on navigating the post-Super Bowl year and years that you did not have?
It's a great question. It's incredibly difficult to repeat, I think, in any sport. You don't see it very often. I think that maybe we didn't plan as well for 1, 2, 3 years out as we are now. Maybe it's just more obvious now. We've got an exceptionally young both roster and talent level that's at a very high level, players that are about to really emerge on the scene that are not necessarily national names. We want to keep as many of those people as possible. Maybe at that stage, we kept more in the short run and didn't quite maximize where we'd be 12, 24, 36 months out. So if anything, and I think Howie is just really on top of that, and I do rely on him for roster construction and the ability to plan out what are we going to have to be doing next February, and it's just from experience.
It's clear what you guys are doing and what you want to do, but is it difficult to sit here right now and say, hey, we're a better team right now than we were February 9th when we beat the Chiefs, when you lose that many guys?
I don't know, Bob. I'd almost like to say that. Has there been a better NFL team than the 24 Eagles. I don't know. I'd much rather say that. I'm very proud of that. I think we had an incredible roster. I think we'll still go into the next season with a superb roster. You know, we didn't talk last February about Zach Bond and Moro Ojomo and, you know, the list goes on and on and on of Becton and guys like that. I mean, where we stand now, March 31st or whatever, there's no games for 5 months. The strategy of bringing in some players that have potentially great skills and great ability with our coaching staff and our culture to maximize their ability. I don't think we talked much about Zach Bond last year. So we hope to have a few of those amongst all the signees and 5 months to go. So there's a lot with Howie, trust me, and I think you know, every day is an excursion in terms of what could be. And there's no games for 5 months. So I think we'll have a very good roster. And you guys can decide how good was that team that you'd mentioned February 9th.
Yeah, Jeffrey, the decision to go to the White House celebrate the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Can you take us behind the thinking that decision? And then you guys didn't go in 2017 the first time you won the Super Bowl.
Right.
Maybe any differences as to why you're going?
Right. No, this was we just, you know, felt this is a time-honored tradition being invited by the White House. So there was no reticence whatsoever. You know, to be celebrated at the White House is a good thing. And there were special circumstances back then that were very different. And so this was kind of a obvious choice, and look forward to it. It's there aren't that many. You know, when you grow up and you hear about, oh, the championship team got to go to the White House. That's what this is. And so we didn't have that opportunity, and now we do. And I think we're all, you know, looking forward to it.
View it as a tacit endorsement.
What's that?
Another offensive coordinator change.
Yes, 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 yes.
What was kind of your thoughts on this process and seeing Nick make this decision also, Kevin, stepping in?
Yep. One thing I'll say, Kellen did a great job. You know, he's a great person. I wish him really well in New Orleans. It's good to be the offensive coordinator of the Eagles lately. It's a good thing. You become a head coach pretty quickly. And Kellen's deserving. Shane was deserving. JG was deserving. Defensive side. These are all deserving, young, smart coaches. Kevin's been working with us for the last few years. He's an integral part of everything we've accomplished. Worked great with Kellen. You know, it was kind of, I see it as both continuity and a dynamic presence in terms of taking it to another level, if that's possible. I think we can continue to say we want to improve in every aspect of the game. And I think Kevin gives us that opportunity.
Going back to the last White House visit, before the invitation was rescinded, I think some players had decided that they would go, others decided that they wouldn't go. Do you plan kind of similarly this time on letting players make that decision?
Absolutely. Our culture is, these are optional things. If you want to enjoy this, come along and we'll have a great time. And if you don't, it's totally an optional thing.
What do you say to the fans who take offense to embracing the president?
Embracing what?
The president.
This is really just an invitation from the White House. That's all this is, and we're not politicizing it in any way because it's not for us.
In the past, I know you've been a proponent of being on the cutting edge of the passing offense.
Yes.
This past season, has it changed your views at all about the White offense?
No. I mean, I think what you always have to – I've always said to our to our play callers, our coaches, our entire organization, I don't care if you throw the ball 30 times in a row or run the ball 30 times in a row. It's about effectiveness. And there's going to be periods of games and periods of defensive mechanisms or strategies. Super Bowl was a great example. I mean, KC did an outstanding job stopping our running attack. And if we weren't a dynamic passing attack and our passing game wasn't outstanding, who knows what would have happened? And vice versa. Let's say they shut down our passing game. We better have a damn good running game. So I've always felt you've got to have excellence in all around. it's still a sport where, you know, most teams pass the majority of the time, us included. But I always feel I want us to be great passing the ball, great running the ball, and we were.
In his retirement speech, Brandon Graham said he planned to go to dinner with you and talk about a role in the organization.
Yeah.
What you kind of envisioned for Brandon and that dinner?
Thank you for bringing up EG, because I would have been remiss not. So last year, you know, we said goodbye temporarily to Jason Kelce and Fletch, and two incredible, incredible Eagles. BG, he embodies everything that one can be proud of as a Philadelphia Eagle, as do the others. Outstanding person, outstanding career. You know, I don't have to tell you, you've been around him as much as anybody. Very, very special person and player. So we've always, BG and I, we've always talked about him being part of everything that we're doing forever. And we haven't had that dinner yet, but, you know, BG will be a welcome addition and part of our family forever. And look forward to it.
Would it be difficult for you to not have Dallas Goedert here?
What's that?
Would it be difficult for you to not have Dallas Goedert here? And when you lose some of these guys, are more difficult to digest than others?
So, you know what? It's hard for me because I'm so, you know, I think you know, really obsessed with the team, the culture, getting to know the players. You know, I take them all out to dinner from time to time. This is not a distant relationship. And so whether it's C.J. Gardner-Johnson or it's Dallas or it's Milt Williams or whoever it is, we got to do what we think is best for the franchise in terms of winning big. But it's for all of us. These are not names. These are human beings that we really, really have been through battle with, been on the big stage with, and enjoy. And so, you know, no different than Zach Ertz. That was, you know, that it's the way it is. You've got to balance it all out. And the one thing is, we got to do what we think is best in terms of roster construction, planning, and winning big. Winning big.
Getting back to PG and everything, you mentioned also Fletch and Kelce.
Yeah.
Before that, I mean, those are obviously three huge leaders on your team. Are you kind of excited to see like the next generation of who's going to step in?
It's a great question. I mean, Lane is already there. Lane is one of those guys, with great respect for Lane. Yeah, I mean, you can see it already. It's an incredible group. It's an incredible group. I give the older guys credit for evolving and continuing that. But the young group is both exceptionally talented and outstanding leadership potential, and they're I think you all probably can tell who they are, and led, by the way, by Saquon and Jalen Hurts. So it's a great situation. You can pinpoint many of these young players as potential leaders already.
Julian has been in the building for a couple of years.
Yeah.
What have you seen from him over that time, and what is to come for him?
Right. So, you know, he's been involved in the business operations, football operations. He's sort of been a part of getting to understand and know every aspect of the operation. It's the best way to prepare him. So, you know, he's humble and smart and gaining experience and most importantly, loves the specialness of the culture, the Eagles, the NFL, and the incredible fan base. He gets it. And it could have been a different way. I hoped as a father, you know, he'd be incredibly obsessed and excited the way I get. He's that way. And yet he grew up in Philadelphia, unlike me, so he has a real appreciation for the fan base and the region. So, but you know what? I think I'm still a young kid, so I don't want to go further than that.
If I can follow up on something you said. You said that this team might be the best in football history.
No, I didn't say that. What I'm saying is it was a damn good team.
But I imagine that's not something you thought on a win. What made you feel that way about this team?
You know what? It just roster-wise, incredibly capable, very well coached. all sides of the ball, really hard to pinpoint a weakness. And then the way it dominated the championship game in the Super Bowl, there's been some other teams. It's right up there, I think, with those teams. That's something for you guys and everyone else to decide, not me. It's just, you know, we just experienced, you know, a major win against Washington and a major win against the Chiefs. And so those were not close games.
I mean, beat Andy, dude. Zach Bond seemed to be a surprise financial dominant for you guys. I mean, in the event of going aggressive and trying to re-sign players,
yep.
You guys have re-signed players in the middle of the season before and this time.
Yep.
You know, what led to that? Or
That's a better question for Howie in terms of timing, but Zach Bond was his number one priority and our number one priority in the offseason. No matter what, we wanted to re-sign Zach. I thought it was a real key thing. But better to ask Nick and Howie.
What did it mean to beat Andy?
Beating a good friend. Well, he beat us. So you know what? What I will say is 2 years ago, you know, we've probably internally talked about the frustration of not winning that game. Maybe you could even call it, you know, to use maybe a stronger word, bitterness or whatever, not towards Andy, but towards some of the things that played out in the fourth quarter in that game. So there, we held on to a lot of that, probably played to our benefit this year. But there was all of us feeling that that was an incredible missed opportunity and, you know, a feeling that we there was a Super Bowl there to be taken. So, Andy, as you know, we have got a great relationship. Enjoyed spending some time with him last night. I just have nothing but respect for this first ballot Hall of Fame coach. And he epitomizes everything that I think the NFL is all about in terms of outstanding head coaches and his strategy. You know, we're able to defeat his offensive strategy. Credit to all of our coaches and players. Spags, outstanding defensive coordinator. You know, there's that wonderful relationship we still have with those people. And, of course, it's great to beat them. They're a great team.
If I might follow up earlier, you
sure.
To how we always think, why is that the thing that you leave up?
I just think we've got the best general manager in football. He thinks every day about roster construction, who to re-sign when, the psychological impact on a team of signing, picking out one player in the middle of a season versus being able to, you know, wait. It's a benefit analysis, cost benefit analysis. He felt it was better to wait until after the season. Didn't mean that we weren't, and he especially wasn't talking to Zach, you know, throughout. So, but when you have somebody that you rely on as top-notch in his game, Howie and his staff, that I rely on those people. I don't make those decisions.
Where do things stand in terms of his future?
Who's that?
Howie.
Very stable and secure.
So how long is he signed?
You know, we never talk about it. A long time.
At 2-2, you guys went 16-1 after that, but the players and coaches talk about that bye week, like the changes that were
productive
it was. From your perspective, I mean, there was a lot of criticism there for Nick, and like, what do you remember about that time, and what do you think catapulted you guys to then going 16-1?
So, Elliot, if I could bottle that, I don't know the answer personally. I would just say that collectively, everybody knew. You know, I think the roster that we had, and to be 2-2 with that roster at that time didn't feel right. And so there's a self-evaluation on everyone's part, coaches, players, what is preventing us from being the team that we just expected to be? And I think it was a combination of a lot of growth-minded players and coaches and everybody. Why, you know? I think that was good timing, it was put to great use, and but a lot of it's resilience, toughness, connectivity, unselfishness on the players, humility, all that kind of stuff evolved to make that possible. You know, because you can say we're not as good as we should have been, blah, blah, blah. You got to have all those qualities to max out. And so that's what happened. We maxed out. It's more relaxing in the fourth quarter, for one, a lot more relaxing. You know, two incredible. It's hard to compare. The first one is the first one that's just, you know, it's incomparable, your first one. But the second one was sort of incredibly gratifying because you feel you have the team you have. And you were able to hit on all cylinders in a way in which it was just, you know, incredibly gratifying. So they're both, you know, extraordinary experiences in one's life when you, you know, devote your life to this existence in the NFL and football and incredible. And, you know, but now I got to say an interesting sort of look at oneself. I feel like I'm just as hungry, if not more now, for a third. You know, ever since the parade, I don't know that there's been one day where, you know, we're not discussing something that's in terms of the planning process to try to get a third. It's nonstop. Now, maybe June, July, there's less one can do. But I find myself, it's a burning desire to get that third, and we'll go from there. That's really, it's an obsession. Maybe it's not healthy, but I think it's worthwhile.
What is it like when the players and coaches and even GMs talk about legacy?
Yeah.
Is that something that you've given thought to about yourself personally?
You know, I don't give myself any time to think about that, honestly. It's going to get, I suppose, determined by others. But I'm someone that actually sort of self-determines. I don't look to sort of outside voices and reputations and all that kind of stuff. Legacy, I just rather focus on getting that third, honestly. I don't think that way. I'm proud of the culture we have more than anything. I'm proud of everything we've accomplished. It's so hard, but I just don't think that way.
Is there at least some pride in being here among the other owners?
Yes. There is, Bo. You know, you did some things right. Let's put it that way. I know our effort is always there. There's no shortage of wanting to win on any of our part at all. But yeah, you walk through and you know how hard it is, and everyone's congratulating you, and it is a good feeling.
Great note, thank you.
There it is, Jeffrey Lurie from the owners' meetings down in Florida. Two important things, Ike, that I took from that. One, he name checks Elliot Shore Parks when Elliot asks a question.
Oh, they all know the Big E.
Oh, you know Elliot. You know Elliot, what's that on your shirt? Is that bird poop on your shirt?
He was listening, I'm sure, on his way over to the press conference.
Yes. And the other thing was at the beginning, Jeff Lurie seems clearly a little annoyed at the tush push stuff.
Yeah. They all are, it seems like.
He had his answer locked and loaded.
Yeah.
He was like, well, if they're doing it because of health, there's nothing to support that. It's got to be more than a, you know, an idea that it might be bad. So it seems like I like the little spark from Mr. Lurie on that one.
I agree. And quite frankly, if you're the Eagles, why wouldn't you feel this way? It seems like everybody is attacking you.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yes. The whatever his hell his name is, the guy from the competition committee, the Falcons guy. Rich McKay was like, we don't like this to be focused on one or two teams. It's like, well
clearly it is.
It's only focused on one team here because the other team is focused on this team, the other team that runs
Buffalo
it.
Buffalo is turncoated. Yeah. They even try to vote against it.
Frauds, don't let the NFL do this to us, Jeffrey. Howie, Nick, make the phone calls. All right. Anyway. All right. Coming up, we will touch on the other rules that did get passed today. Mm-hmm. That did happen.
And one the Eagles proposed.
Yes. That is coming up next. Also, your thoughts on the tush push and if it will affect the Eagles in a substantial way next year. If they ban it. 215-592-9494. This is the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz.